It's 5 o'clock in Pirate Country, and it's time to get pumped up with the P-Man. Hit the door and hit the road. 94.3 The Game is going to get you home, and the P-Man's not holding back.
Yes! Yes! Pirates win! Pirates win!
Bring on the Patrick Johnson Show on 94.3 The Game.
Holy mackerel!
The flagship station of the ECU Pirates.
Hey, welcome everybody. Patrick Johnson here. It is the PJ Show on 94.3 The Game. Streaming 94.3thegame.com and the IBX Media app. A little maintenance on the fairway up here. Jeez. Bad angle, Bill. Bad angle for the P-Man.
Michael, set up the camera.
Well, what do you expect? Philip the Ref Pilkington producing today's effort. Did a great job closing out the PJ Show yesterday with some Pirate Report goodness, and we'll do some of that here for you in a second. We've got baseball coming up today. East Carolina taking on William and Mary from Colonial Williamsburg. Scooter and Coach O will have the blow-by-blow accounts and analysis for you coming up here on 94.3 The Game with an airtime on the radio network for pregame activities at 5:45. We're carrying you up until that point. Bethany Bradshaw joins us today. Bethany's got a new book out about ECU baseball. It'll be out on Friday. You can go ahead and pre-order now, and Bethany will have all that information for you. And if you pre-order, you'll be registered to win fabulous prizes surrounding ECU baseball. So deets on that coming up. The name of the book is Never Take This for Granted. It's about Pirate baseball fans and is a really, really good book, and very excited about that. Pilk, anything you want to add before we go? I guess Caitlin Clark, no surprise, was taken number one in the WNBA draft.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of articles, Patrick. I want to get your thoughts on this. They're saying, will Caitlin Clark save the WNBA?
Well, I think punch no. yourself up there, Pilk. Okay. Let's see you for the vast video audience here.
There we go. So they said, will Caitlin Clark save the WNBA? I think she saved the 2024 Women's Final Four, clearly, with their TV numbers. But I just don't see people tuning in for a random Tuesday night WNBA game just because Caitlin Clark's
okay.
playing. What do you think, PJ?
Why do you think this?
I think the hype around someone when it comes to the NCAA tournament, even though it's the women's, there's something about March. There's something about what we love. It brings in the casual fans on a Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock when nothing else is on. But Tuesday night, your kids are at dance practice and baseball practice.
But
you're
then
not going
that,
would
go for, that would go for any other sport, though, Pilk.
Yeah, it would. But still, you go home and it's like, man, I got to catch the end of, you know, well, Hurricanes, Blue Jackets tonight, but do I really want to catch the end of the Liberty or the feet, whoever the heck she plays for and whoever the heck else is in the
game? Here's what I think they're going to program it, and I saw a number. What do they play, 40 games?
Sure.
Okay.
I have no idea.
Well, with the exception of maybe at most a half dozen, probably maybe less than that. Anyway, point is the majority of the games that the Fever – are going to play, and that's the team she was drafted by, and she's from Indiana, so the Indiana Fever, the number of games they're going to play on national television is like the vast majority. It's probably 90-plus percent of their games are going to be on national TV. And so that alone means that there's going to be an audience because it's on, and because one thing we do know about national television, Pilk, they put the programming in what they view as the most advantageous time. So if it makes sense to start the game at 7, they'll start it. If it makes sense to start the game at 8, they'll start it at 8. If they want to put them on Sunday afternoon, they'll probably have a slew of Sunday afternoon games this summer. They'll position the games where they have the potential to draw the biggest audience. Now, can she do it? Yes, I think she can, because look at the numbers. I mean, they had the highest rated NCAA tournament game in several years, not just for women, but for the whole tournament. So I really think the numbers will improve. And then it's, you know, what is success? How are we going to measure it? Is she going to draw 14 million people to week in and week out? Probably not. But if you are looking at maybe doubling your audience for television? Because, I mean, the WNBA TV, have you ever researched the WNBA TV numbers? I did that a few years ago.
No.
Brutal. I mean, stuff that, I mean, brutal. Infomercials have probably drawn more of an audience on network television. I think this is a great opportunity for that league to expand its viewership footprint. And I think she's just that fantastic of a player. You know, I'd be more worried about her being a bust than I would whether she'll help. Because she'll help them this year, undoubtedly. I mean, Henry is a great example. The great Henry Hinton, Broadcast Hall of Famer, Legend Award winner. You know, he hadn't watched women's basketball since the granny shot, probably. But, like, watched Caitlin Clark and was blown away. Caitlin Clark's special, dude.
She is. I just don't know with 40 games a year or whatever, people are going to tune in that. They might watch her first
game.
No,
I mean, they're not going to watch every single game. It's not going to set record ratings every game. But, I mean, and it'll just as we get into the summer, it'll erode the numbers. Well, but everything erodes in the summer viewership-wise.
True.
But, I mean, I think her first game or two will have big numbers. I think her first game will do gangbusters numbers, depending on what network it's on and how they program it. But, yeah. I mean, you're not going against football.
No, you will be going against the NBA playoffs, though.
You're going against the NBA playoffs a little bit, and you're going against the AFL now?
The UFL.
UFL.
Yeah.
Not the ALF or the AF or whatever it was, but the UFL, the UF. But, I mean, you know, even that's not setting record ratings numbers, but it draws a good enough number.
True.
I mean,
I think there'll be a certain demographic of people that watch this, and I don't exactly want to totally use the word on air because I might, you know, not be sensitive to a certain group and get suspended for 3 days like we were talking about on Talk of the Town. But there's a certain group of women that may find other women attractive that will really watch a lot of this.
You're filling your oats today.
Yeah, Pilk. I am.
You're filling your oats today. I'll give you an example. After the Masters after Sunday, the Masters Sunday, right? I found myself, I think I might have watched a Curb episode, maybe. I can't because I'm down to the last two episodes. I know the finale aired last weekend, but I've been watching it on the app. But I kind of found myself wanting I would like to have settled in Sunday going into the week with a game coming off the NCAA tournament, you know, coming off college basketball. I'd have been excited to have watched a basketball game.
There were 15 NBA games on Sunday, Patrick.
Yeah.
Every team played.
But were there, did they have, what was the national, what was there any Sunday night?
No, that's true. They were all at noon or 3:30.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
So good point. Yeah, I think there was like one game left when the Masters ended in that. There was only like 2 minutes left in that game. It was a blowout.
So when the Masters concluded, you know what I'm like, at 7 o'clock, all the pomp and circumstance and all that. So it would have been fantastic to have settled in and watched a little bit of a game. Not saying I'd have watched every second. Not saying I would have been glued to the TV every second. But I do know she's must-watch television. Their ratings have got to improve. Because they can't get any, they certainly as hell can't get any worse.
Oh, I think they'll improve. The headline was, will it save the WNBA?
I mean,
save's a strong word.
What are we saving it from, though? Because the NBA funds it.
True. Save it to where people, I guess, where the common folk will at least tune in. Because I think every other sport, there are certain games where the common folk will tune in if you're
a casual fan.
Yeah.
Jimmy and Jane Walmart.
Yeah, I don't think Jimmy and Jane Walmart watch a single WNBA game now. Now they might.
No, now they don't. They probably don't now, but I think they will. Again, she's special. She's very unique. I mean, like, who does Tarazi play for? Google this, Pilkington.
All right, do you know Tarazi's first name? Because
just put Tarazi Connecticut WNBA in your Google search. But, I mean, I think it's Diana Tarazi. I mean, that right there is the part, because she's one of the all-time greats, and I can't tell you anything about her. But I will tell you this. I would be more apt to watch that matchup because of Tarazi's junk talk about Caitlin Clark than I would, you know, as you say, a random Tuesday in June or whatever.
Yeah, she plays for Phoenix.
Yeah. So, I mean, when Phoenix and and the Fever play, sign me up. I want to see that head to head. Would I have at all been interested in this previously? No. What do we have time-wise, Bill? Do we need to get a break?
Yeah, we're getting close to needing a break here.
Pirate baseball is coming your way today. East Carolina will be taking on William & Mary, and we're leading you into coverage of that here as the number 9 Pirates visit William & Mary. Jaden Winter getting the go for ECU today with a 2-1 mark. We'll come back. Bethany Bradshaw, speaking of Pirate baseball, will join us. Got a new book out. Tell you all about it. Stay with us here on the PJ Show. Bethany Bradshaw, acclaimed author, joins us here on the Patrick Johnson Show as she has a brand new book out about ECU baseball. Never take this for granted. And it's not only about ECU baseball, but more about the fans, the celebration of Pirate baseball fans. Bethany Bradshaw joins us here on the Patrick Johnson Show. There she is. Hello, Bethany.
Hi, Patrick. Thank you for having me.
Show those that are joining us on the video feed the beautiful cover of this book, Never Take This for Granted, and it's by Bethany Bradshaw. Oh, that looks very, very nice. And this is about something that is near and dear to a lot of Pirate fans' hearts, life in the jungle, Pirate, life as a Pirate baseball fan, and near and dear to your heart because you've been known to frequent the jungle a time or two.
I have been known. I am a regular jungle dweller on the left field side. So, yes, it's something I've wanted to do. And really, I wanted to do something else about ECU baseball because I think what we have here is very unusual and is kind of second to none in terms of the culture surrounding this team and the support and the winning tradition here. I mean, it's just so different than what most college baseball environments are like. And because I'm a fan myself, I just decided it was really time to do something that's going to kind of capture all of what I just said, not, you know, the big wins, the big postseason moments mixed in with the people who for whom this has become such a special community and an amazing tradition and try to do something that captured all of that in one book. So it's very different from anything else I've ever written. And I had a great time doing it.
This originally started, if I recall correctly, the feeling was, okay, this seems like the 23-23, an opportunity, maybe a season to break through and get to Omaha coming off the super regional season. You know, it kind of felt right. And obviously the team didn't even host a regional last year. So at what point did you pivot or did you maybe have some of this for the other book and realize this is good stuff? How did that process evolve?
A little bit of both. I still want to write the Omaha book, of course, but I was thinking I'm going to follow this team in 2023 wherever they go and see what happens. And it could have been an inside look at a season. But along the way, I actually got a press credential from ECU Athletics. So I was up in the press box some, which I haven't done in years. But after just a few games of that, I was like, well, I actually would rather be out where I normally watch with the fans. And I was interviewing fans and I was realizing there are these great stories embedded in every part of the field, which is kind of the way the book is arranged. So I started collecting those stories. And then I think it was about May, probably about the first week in May, when I thought, if they don't make it, I think this book is actually taking a form that's different from what I anticipated when I started. And I don't want to wait. I want to capture this. I want to get these people on these pages. And if there's a third ECU baseball book that deals with a trip to Omaha, you know, that's fine. We can do that too.
Right. You could do that as well. This one is out. Mm-hmm. Never Take This for Granted. Where can people buy this book about ECU baseball and Pirate baseball fans?
So the official release date is Friday the 19th. So that's this week. And also, you can pre-order up until midnight on April the 18th, which is Thursday night. So if you do pre-order, you're eligible to win a great prize package, which includes a signed powder purple jersey signed by Carter Cunningham.
Ooh. Wow.
Signed copies of both my ECU baseball books and a signed Parker Bird trading card. So that's a great package. Anybody who pre-orders by midnight on the 18th is eligible. But the book will be out on the 19th. ECUBaseballBook.com is where you can pre-order, where you can see the stores that are going to carry the book. And also, I have a few book signings the weekend of that book release, one on Friday at UBE, one on Saturday at Kauffman's Menswear, and I'll be inside the stadium throughout that weekend, the Wichita State Series, selling books inside the stadium. So it's going to be hard to miss me. I'm really sorry about that. Not really sorry that weekend. So if anyone wants a book, just kind of holler my name, and I'll probably come running and sell you one.
And can you go to BethanyBradshaw.com and get this, get directed to these places also, or in a roundabout way, I guess? Okay. All right.
And that's very good. Other books that I've written. Yeah, we'll make sure that's all up there.
Mm-hmm. Many of those. Many of those. The great Bethany Bradshaw is with us here. So how many fans are chronicled? How do you choose the stories? Because, I mean, I realize there are regulars. Are there semi-regulars that their stories are also kind of told in this? So without giving too much away, tell us a little bit about the book, if you will.
If there's any mega fan that you've noticed in a game there, that rather because they're really loud or they're really notable or very consistent, chances are pretty good they're in the book. I started and I went around the field. I started in center field, even though I know the way baseball positions are numbered, that's not the first number. But I needed to start in center field because that's where the history of the Jungle and Harrington Field really originated. And then went to left and told the stories of Brian Dilday and the Megaphone crew in left field and some of the fans that stay out there near where I sit, and then went around from there. So what I loved is to just learn that there's fans like Todd Howell, who sits, you know, kind of on the first base side, but near behind home plate, and Mike Radford on the third base side, and Chu Justice, and who are quite loud, quite vocal, quite well known. So it's not just the Jungle. It's the fans in the stands all the way around. I also really enjoyed the stories of the children who, for whom that has become a really special and important community. Some of the kids that I interviewed for the book have had some struggles, are on the autism spectrum, or some physical or learning struggles where they might not have the kind of community with their peers that they maybe would like to have. But that community out there at Clark LeClaire Stadium has just filled this void. And so for the parents to let me come in and get to know these kids who are just such huge fans, it was really a privilege. There's 50 people about interviewed. Some of those are former players, a couple are coaches. One of them cleans the ECU baseball offices, and he's amazing and kind of a coach in his own right. So it's quite a wide range of folks throughout the last 25 years.
Bethany Bradshaw, Never Take This for Granted is the name of the book. If you're with us on video, let's have Bethany hold it up again. And we got a reader copy, but there it is. Beautiful, beautiful book there at the ECU had on home plate. With the origins of the Jungle, how did that come about initially? Mm-hmm.
Sure. So Tony Brown and Charlie Martin are the original kind of Jungle dwellers. Tony is in some circles known as the mayor of the Jungle, and their wives taught school together, and they got to know each other in the early kind of the year is not exactly set, but in the 80s, got to know each other and went out. They just kind of independently decided to go watch baseball, and were sitting on those metal bleachers at Harrington, and it was hot. And they weren't comfortable on the metal bleachers, and they saw a couple people out in the outfield. So they just decided that would be a better place to watch. And from there, they tell some great stories about one of those old timers who was out there was kind of hollering at the opposing center fielder. And they thought that looked like fun. And they got cinder blocks, because at that point you could stand on a cinder block. You had to do that to see over that Harrington fence. Started cooking wings, started just inviting their friends to join them. And, you know, you could back up your car, your truck under the trees and tailgate outside the gate of that old field. So that was really the beginning of this great community. At one point, they built some makeshift bleachers using some old Minji's Coliseum seats. And in a story I love, they did all that construction during the course of a doubleheader on a Saturday. So anytime there was a pitching change or an inning, a break between innings, they would saw and hammer and then they would stop. and so they created this entire area of seats on one day while watching two baseball games. And so they were really, you know, they're still out there. Tony has built what they call the condos out there in center field, which many of you have probably seen. They're purple, and they kind of block them and some friends from the wind. So they have purple walls on the sides. And and they're still very faithful and sit out there. But yeah, they're the OGs. And it's one of my favorite stories was three generations of Martin. So Charlie Martin, his son, Charlie Martin Jr., and his grandson, Cole, and all of their relationships with ECU baseball over the years.
When you look at, you know, when you get to certain series, postseason series, and you know, just certain of it, it's the opposing left fielder gets a pretty good razzing, but it ends up, I think, being, you know, a respect thing in a lot of ways. And we've seen opposing players over the years sort of relish the idea of playing before that gathering out in the jungle. And this isn't a jungle book. It's just, to be clear. Yeah.
Yeah.
But how is there any stories in this, or have you heard any stories that maybe didn't make this edition that, you know, where that went really, really well and maybe it didn't go as well?
Yeah, I mean, there are, you know, it kind of makes all the difference. You can tell within the first inning or two if that left fielder is just like a statue and he is not turning and responding at all when the fans are trying to chat with him and ask him questions and you know, generally rib him. I mean, there's a lot of trash talk, but at least on left field, it's clean and pretty good natured. You can tell if they're going to have a good time and they're going to jump in with that, or they're not going to have a good day if they don't respond. But the ones who have responded and become buddies with those fans, they're invited to tailgates. You know, if it's a tournament and they're not playing every game, you'll find them out there getting a hot dog and a beer, you know, during one of the other team's games. Sometimes they give care packages to opposing left fielders. And I interviewed Anthony Cruz and Colin Donnelly from Quinnipiac in 2019, yeah. Who played here in the regional. And they actually won that first game of that regional. It was their only postseason win in program history. So it's a great memory for those guys. And Anthony was the left fielder for part of that weekend and got that care package. And it was his last moment of his college baseball career. So just to hear him talk about what it meant to have those fans put that package together with snacks and put his name on the top and give it to him. It's really great. So it was fun to talk to some of those opposing players. Another was a guy from George Mason last year. His name's Jordan Smith, and he was the center fielder. And I was out there and just noticed how much he was interacting. So I talked to him. And another who was a pitcher was Chris Kaler, who pitched against ECU for GW last year in the season opening series, and now obviously pitches for East Carolina. So it was neat to hear his perspective as an opposing pitcher and now as a Pirate pitcher.
So Harrington Field, as you so aptly described, were metal bleachers. In fact, we used to have to do the broadcasts from the metal bleachers with this really rickety table. So how much of the culture in the grandstand, if you will, changed with the people you talked to when it went from, you know, what it was, which was a field, to now a palatial stadium comparatively speaking?
Very comfortable. But I don't think it changed. I mean, there are others. I didn't spend a lot of time out in Harrington Field, so in terms of the stand. So there are people that might argue with me, but I think the spirit is the same. Certainly the noise level has increased because more people can now sit or are now able to or stand or yell or are now able to get in. I mean, I was out there last night at a game and just and in the stands on the third base side, and it was loud and insane, and there were children banging on the seats, and you know, so I think that the spirit of the place is still there, and many opposing teams that have come in would say it's the best place they've ever played. So I think it's okay to have comfortable seats, but also to scream your head off with the purple gold chant at the same time.
Was there any concern when Clark LeClaire Stadium was built that there would be, the jungle wouldn't exist any longer, that that overall bandbox feel and the fans right on top would go away? Was there concern legitimately or otherwise about that?
I think so. I think particularly you'll hear about the trees. You know, those original trees from the Harrington Jungle were torn down, new trees were planted, and the stalwart Harrington Field jungle folks who moved over to the new stadium thought, it's never going to be the same. We're never going to have the shade. We're never going to have the jungle feel. And, you know, trees do grow. And so here we are, 19
funny
years
how
later.
That works.
And it, I think the trees are quite nice. And so they're willing to say, oh yeah, that worked out pretty well. The berm, nobody was quite sure what the berm would be like, and what that would create in terms of views and everything. And you know, it's part of sitting in the jungle to me is you still have to kind of jockey for position. And you have to tell sometimes the kid standing on the bench that he's way too tall for the bench, and he has to get, you know, there's this jungle etiquette that gets played out game after game, but that's the beauty of it. I guess that's what we were saying a few minutes ago about the relative, you know, calmness and dignified nature of the stands. And those of us out in the jungle, it's a little bit like, you know, a free for all at times.
I know last year we were trying to convince him to let us do a broadcast from the jungle. And I think that was something that was being kicked around a little bit as we might try it this year, but we've had some changes internally to the production. So maybe next year I can twist an arm and get out there and do a broadcast of the game from the jungle. You know, for the weather's got to be perfect. The weather's got to be perfect. That's the, you can't have rain on the, or pollen blowing into the equipment.
How close to the cannon do you want to be? These are considerations.
Right, exactly. So the cannon, you bring that up. When did that become a tradition?
You know what? It's in the book, and I'm going to have to look up the year to tell you for sure, but it's been in this iteration in Clark LeClair Stadium, the cannon. And it was interesting. I interviewed a guy named James Gentry, who's kind of the de facto head of that cannon crew. They have a group of who all have the key and can get the cannon and set it up. But he told some great stories about, you know, one time in the past few years when he dropped the cannon in the parking lot on a, I think it was a Saturday of a 3-game series, and had to rebuild it Sunday morning with his dad real quick to have it ready. So, you know, it's one of those things that is just obviously we're Pirates and so appropriate. And I love to watch the kids who just know it's coming and they're just ready, holding their ears. So that's something that adds so much to the environment.
Best food you've ever had out in the jungle?
Tailgate food. Josh's smash burgers out there at that left field megaphone tent are pretty good. That's probably the best thing I've had. Although
tailgate, but wait a minute, is there like filet mignon or something? When you say tailgate food, that sounds like there's different levels.
I think so. I don't know. I mean, I just like that the variety at that particular tailgate, which is the one I go to the most, they've got good variety. He makes lamb, but I haven't had the lamb, but I've been very
like
impressed.
In a gyro?
It's like a leg of lamb.
Okay.
It's a leg, and he makes ribs, and so I have tried the ribs. They're delicious. So you know, hot dogs and burgers are the most prominent, obviously. That's the classic. But every once in a while, they get kind of fancy out there.
Let me ask you this. What was the official attendance? No, not official. What was the unofficial attendance for the Super Regional? How many people were really out there?
62. What do you think? Something like that.
I think it was over 7,000.
You think it was ever 7? I mean, it was crazy. It's just because everybody.
I know
just
they had to. It was announced as a certain thing, but it was well over. It had to be 7,000 at least.
Yeah.
Maybe 8.
Yeah, it probably was. It probably was. And I mean, everybody has a story about that Saturday game against Texas, but mine was. I think everybody has a story that they did something where they feel responsible for what happened during game 2 of the Super. Mine was, I slipped out for about 30 minutes to go to a bridal shower.
Oh, Bethany.
I mean, whores. And I didn't stay. I literally brought the gift, gave the bride a hug and said, I got to go. I'm going back to this game. And I'll never forget it because she is not a sports fan, but she went to ECU and she said, this is really going to happen, isn't it? And I was like, it's really going to happen. And I went back and the wheels fell off.
Is she still married? Is she still married?
She is, thankfully. She's still married. She has a huge son. So that part's going fine. But I do feel responsible. I will never again, you know, if it's my own child's shower, I won't leave. My children wouldn't schedule a shower during a postseason tournament. They know better.
It's like getting married during football season. Come on. Never Take This For Granted. It is the new book from Bethany Bradshaw. Bethany, if you'll hold it up again for the video audience, because it's a handsome cover. And that is available.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That is available coming up on Friday. Go where, Bethany, to pre-order and enter to win fabulous prizes. Tell everybody again.
Fabulous. The website is ecubaseballbook.com. Pretty easy to remember. Awesome. ecubaseballbook.com.
A Carter Cunningham lavender signed jersey. I call it lavender. Bethany's got the Keith LeClaire book and this book that she'll sign for you. And there is a Parker Bird.
There's the other book.
There it is. Mm-hmm. Coaching Third, the Keith LeClaire story. So are you working on anything else?
I'm doing a couple of ghostwriting projects. Nothing that you really want to meet it. Audiences, just kind of writing for other people. So those are nice to pay the bills, but you know, nothing that I'm as excited about as this at the moment.
What's the next thing you're cooking up in your mind though that you would work on? I mean, I know it kind of has, when it comes to you, it comes to you.
When it comes to me, I just need people to tell me the sports stories that haven't been told that they need me to pursue. That's all I'll say. I mean, the best, you know, the Dixie Classic, which is one of my favorite books, that came from a random conversation with a friend who was a State fan who just mentioned it. And I looked it up and realized it needed to be told. So I need a good sports story that hasn't been told, preferably something that, you know, has some ties to this part of the world.
Interesting.
So I'm up for it. I'm sure, you guys remember, you can find me that weekend. So you can tell me.
Yeah, there you go. During the Wichita State weekend. Hey, Bethany, great to see you. It always is. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me. I look forward to seeing everybody at the ballpark April 19th through 21st.
Awesome. Great to have Bethany Bradshaw with us here. We'll be right back.
Philip Pilkington here with your 94.3 The Game Sports Flash Update and Pirate Report. The baseball team will open up their week against 25-11 William & Mary. The Pirates will be trying to build off a 4-1 week last week, which saw Trey Savage win Conference Pitcher of the Week after six no-hit innings against Charlotte on Friday night. And Riley Johnson, the center fielder, won Conference Player of the Week. The game can be heard right here on 94.3 The Game following the Patrick Johnson Show at 5:45 for that just after 6 o'clock first pitch with Scott Rogers and Coach O. The Pirates are one stroke behind SMU after day one of the Women's Conference Championship in golf at Southern Hills Golf Club in Brooksville, Florida. They are currently playing the second round right now. Last night, two-time player of the year Caitlin Clark was the number one overall pick by the Indiana Fever in the WNBA draft. Tonight, the Western Conference play-in games will be held as the Pelicans will host the Lakers. The winner will be the 7 seed and head to the Mile High City to take on the defending champion Denver Nuggets and Nikola Jokic. The Pelicans are favored by 1.5 in this contest. Game 2 will be between the Kings and Warriors. The loser of Game 2 will be eliminated. The winner will get the loser of that early game to try and play and be the 8 seed. The 8 seed will eventually end up playing the number 1 seed Oklahoma City Thunder. Tonight, the Golden State Warriors are favored by 3.5 on the road in Sacramento. And later tonight at 7 o'clock, the Carolina Hurricanes will wrap up the regular season. They'll be traveling up to Columbus to take on the last place Blue Jackets. The outcome of the game will not affect the Hurricanes' seeding come playoff time. That'll do it for your 94.3 The Game Sports Flash Update and Pirate Report. On the other side of this timeout, we'll be back to wrap up the Patrick Johnson Show.
And now, the stunning conclusion of the show. It's the P-Man here on 94.3 The Game.
Up in here. You like that, didn't you, Pilk? You didn't know I had that ability. This is my era, Pilk.
He grew up in the 90s.
My jam. Thanks to Bethany Bradshaw for being with us, and go out and buy that book. It's or pre-order it right now, but buy it certainly when it comes out Friday, and you'll see Bethany all over the park this weekend. Jaden Winter and right-hander Alex Marcus is the lineup. They pitch in that pod system, you know, where they three innings. So, I mean, you're going to see some good arms tonight for William and Mary, I'm sure, or capable arms. 100th meeting between the two programs that dates back to both being charter members of the CAA, which is now the Coastal Athletic Association, no longer the Colonial Athletic Association. Will we change George Washington's name now to the Coastals? Will they be the GW Coastals? You know, it's interesting. We had a story on Talk of the Town where a 16-year-old asked a question about alien, I guess, for an English assignment, like outer space alien or illegal alien, and got suspended. He's a track and field runner. Now we understand he's going to be able to run track and field, but you know, there's a kid who wanted to fight him.
By the way,
he made that statement. Yeah.
Revolutionaries is now what George Washington has been changed to.
Oh, are they the revolutionaries?
Yeah, I knew they had been changed this year. I just couldn't remember to what.
So do you think that that is going to be no longer allowed? I mean, you have Cleveland that's changed their name. The Washington Commandos now from Redskins. I mean, it's, you know, we're changing these things.
It's probably going to end up being like soccer, right? We're going to have the New York Baseball Club, the Washington Baseball Club, and the same thing with the NBA. Everything's going to be offensive, right? They're going to be the basketball team.
You're saying it with a little outrage and for comic effect, but I mean, that's where we're headed. We're legislating everybody's talk and language. And I mean, not to say you can't have standards, but it's just really interesting. Interesting times we're in. All right, back tomorrow at 5 o'clock. Pirate baseball coming your way right after this.